Welcome to Technori Live. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, and we are in studio at WGN Radio talking with Chicago's top entrepreneurs, founders, and innovators, and entertainment people today. This is a special day. We've got Showbiz Shelley, the famous Showbiz Shelley, here in studio.
Are you kidding me? The famous Scott Catoon. Hello.
Well, hello. I am not famous. Infamous, I'll take. I'll take infamous all day long.
You are. In my circle, at least, Scott. Yes.
I mean, that's really cool to find out, actually. I didn't know
it
anyone
is.
Even paid attention to me.
Of course, yes.
So I brought you in for numerous reasons. One, I just want to talk about Tom Brady because now I know he's in tech, and I want to talk about Jay-Z now that I know he's in tech startups.
Yeah.
But also, I just want to preface this, and I'm going to leave. We are building this as we go.
Yeah.
This is quite literally on the fly.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of events. I know you do, too.
Mm-hmm.
Your events are more fun than mine.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. But I don't know. I haven't been to too many of your events, so I can't really compare it to much.
My events, the ones that I host, are awesome.
Oh, yours. Yeah.
The ones that I have to go to that I am not responsible for suck.
Okay.
The ones that you go to, though, like have celebrities and like Vince Vaughn is hanging out there and there's like cool stuff. The ones that I have to go to, not the ones I host. Those are kick-ass.
Yes, yes, yes.
The ones that I go to are like I'm not a craft beer guy, so like the whole only craft choice, there's no booze. Like if it doesn't have something that I can have 10 of,
mm-hmm.
I'm sort of already like bummed out.
No, I'm there with you. I mean, I'm more of a vodka soda
type
person.
Yes, I'm a vodka or rum and diet person.
Yes, I don't necessarily go for the diet, but just because I tend to spill on myself if I spill, so at least I'd rather get something clear, right? It keeps the mess at a minimum. So,
that is thinking things through. At the point that I get in the night, I'm certainly not worried about what my appearance is at this point.
That's true.
But the main thing I guess I'm getting at and why I have you here is, one, because you said yes, but the other main reason is ultimately whether it's networking events, whether it's award ceremonies, which there are more than there need to be people award winners, I think,
mm-hmm.
And anything in between, they're usually pretty crappy. They usually don't have like real good service and people just, I feel like I said this to you before offline. I feel like it's thrown by people who've never been to the party.
Yeah. No, I could see what you're saying because I know with a lot of the events I go to, I mean, it's specifically for the type of crowd that they know what they're in for, right? They need the good drinks, the sort of good entertainment, the band, whatever it is. Whereas the ones that you go to, right, there might be a little
bit
of
difference there. So we're
going to change
that.
I agree with you.
Right. So yeah. I have a theory.
Yes.
I think that the reason that they have continued to suck, not only just because the people who throw them have never been to a party,
okay,
but is also because nobody covers them mm-hmm. in a way that has to make them responsible for the party they throw. They only talk about like, here, there's 300 people came to network and exchange business cards. Listen, if you're at a party and the only thing you can talk about is that exchange business cards, that was a shitty party. I'm just saying.
I mean, right. So the thing is, when you approached me, I'm so glad you did. And I know that a lot of people are probably like, Showbiz Shelley here on Technori. What the heck? This makes no sense. Especially, and I don't even know if you know this about me because I don't think we talked about it. I still write out checks. Like,
I don't know how to write out a check.
Yes. Yeah, so it's like, what are we doing here? But I think we did see a lot of similarities actually in terms of the way celebrities are actually getting involved with a lot of these tech startup companies
and
events.
There's that. And I also think, and I mean, you could name a ton of them. Ashton Kutcher is another good example of someone who's been around Chicago a lot. We just had the guy from Friends.
David Schwimmer.
He was just at 1871.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of intertwinement in our entertainment. And what I want to kind of highlight with you, and I think if this works out and you volunteer to do this, I think we're going to do this on a regular basis, is have you sort of talk about what we need to see in the event space. And I think that together we can change the way that events are thrown because they know that we might be in attendance and we will be on the show talking about how crappy it was going forward. So I'm super excited to have you here. I guess a little more background on yourself, just in case there's anyone who doesn't know you. Who are you for those who do not know?
Yes.
Shelley.
Yes, sure. So I've been on radio in Chicago for a while doing mornings. And like you said, I do entertainment. That's primarily what I cover, Showbiz Shelley, hence the name. So, you can always find me. I'm out at all kinds of entertainment events, red carpet premieres. I've been out to cover all kinds of award shows. I do all that kind of stuff. And I love, the way our worlds intertwine. Also, I like TV shows like Shark Tank.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot of the way that a lot of this stuff has gotten to the forefront in terms of celebrities. And I'm very excited to be here. And I was so excited when you asked me to be a part of this. I think it's a really cool opportunity. And I'm looking forward to, like you say, sort of crashing these parties and seeing what we come across.
Me too. I am too. So I'm going to start going on with our normal show.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite you to hop on over to, we've got our other spot here. I want to say that it's set up here on three.
Okay,
have you move over to the other spot. We're going to have our next guest on, and I'll sort of run down the show for everybody. So today's show, if you're watching on Facebook, which is kind of a new thing for us, it's going to be a regular deal. We've got some amazing guests today. Before I plug and have them all come on the show, I want to make sure that everyone knows that the Technori Showcase, Startup Showcase, which is designated to all female founders this month, is March 28th at Chase Auditorium. The networking portion, which will be more fun than the ones that I'm making fun of on this show, begins at 6 p.m. Actually, I don't think it's going to be that much more fun because it's just business cards too. But the event itself is going to be fantastic. We are going to have keynote speaker Tastytrade co-CEO Christy Ross and five incredible startup companies that are all led by females from all over the country. We've got people flying in from New York for this. So it is sure to be an incredible affair. You can get your tickets at technori.events and use WGN as a promo and save yourself 25%. And I think we also are selling t-shirts online, which is pretty cool if you want to sport some Technori swag. As for our show today, we have got an incredible guest, Stuart Frankel, CEO of Narrative Science. He is going to be here to tell us about Quill. I should say he's the human who's going to be here to talk us about Quill. Welcome to the show, for starters.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
So I have to tell you, I had dinner or drinks with Vic Pascucci, who is now the managing director at Lightbank. And he had so many amazing things to say about you and told me how exciting this show is going to be. So I just want to prep everybody by telling them, I'm setting the bar very high for you. We're going to talk about some cool stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thank you. I set the bar, you know, I set it low for me because I can hop right over it. And I set it really, really high for all my guests so I look better. I want to kind of jump into things right away. Your company fascinates me in a ton of ways. I think that we've had at least five people on the show who come from the IoT space and are heavily in data. And we've probably had 50 to 100 more who have had questions or some sort of interplay with how they use their data. And that you have figured out a way to essentially create a communication device that can be, you know, mass scale to analyze all this data so that people can actually understand and put it to use in real time blows my mind.
Yeah, you got that's a great description. You know, we're living in this world of data now, and really, I think in many cases just drowning in it. And we saw this in 2010, and really thought, hey, there must be a better way to really glean insight from data, and importantly, just communicate information from data and make decisions against it. And that was really how the company got started.
So you mentioned, so it starts in 2010. How did you see that this was going to be a need, or did it evolve into this to what it is? I mean, everything always evolves, but like, did it evolve into this, or did you walk up and go, not necessarily the date, but in 2017, there's going to be this problem that we are going to be absolutely perfectly teed up to solve?
I wish the answer to that
question can say yes.
Was yes.
You can. This is pre-recorded. You can say whatever you want.
So the idea actually started before 2010. So that in 2010 we started as a commercial entity. For about a year and a half prior to that, there was some research that was done at Northwestern University.
Go Cats!
And lots of great stuff going on then, and even more great stuff going on now in the computer science department at Northwestern. I had just left a job. I worked for a company called DoubleClick. That company was sold to Google. I stuck around for several months after that transaction and then left. And as I was leaving and winding down things at Google, I got introduced to computer science professors at Northwestern. And they're AI guys, essentially. Their background is in artificial intelligence. And they continue to do AI research really throughout what we now describe as the long AI winter. And one of the technologies that I got exposed to after I started spending time with them was a little baseball story writer. It would take box score and play-by-play information from a baseball game and then instantaneously generate a story that sounded like a reporter was at the game. And it worked, and it worked really well. And it wasn't a Mad Lib. You didn't start with a story. You started with the data, and you told the story that could be found in the data.
Now, you know, you see all of our producers around here like frowning, right? he just totally thwarted their sportcaster dreams.
Well, the good news is we're not doing that anymore, okay? Because we even at a really early stage, we thought, well, this doesn't need to be limited to baseball. It doesn't need to be limited to football or other sports. There's an enormous amount of data out there. And most of it, even at the time, wasn't going used. And we thought, well, there's going to be exponential growth. And this type of technology, if we could abstract it and really turn it into something that could take any kind of data and turn it into any kind of narrative reporting, whether it was a snippet of text from IoT data, as you mentioned, like an alert that got generated, or a 20-page investment research report that looks and sounds like a Wall Street equity analyst took a look at a stock, did research, and wrote up the report. That was really the vision very early on for the company, and we're really, really living that vision today. Now, in terms of timing, we were pretty sure that we were right, that this technology was gonna work and there would be a need for it. The timing, we got lucky, honestly. If we had started a few years earlier, we probably wouldn't have made it.
Yep.
But we started at the right time, and we were able to do a lot of the foundational work. And then when the market started to open up over the last couple of years, and particularly now with all the work that's being done with conversational interfaces and bots, we were really well positioned to take advantage of that market.
So I want to ask you a couple of strategic questions in here. You mentioned the fact that the timing was probably somewhat luck, although I suspect that's not all the case. Were there key indicators that you, as the CEO of the company or your team, noticed that you were thinking, okay, because you spoke about the kind of the long winter, which I actually experienced as well. I worked with numerous startup companies in the AI space in 13, and they didn't make it. They had started earlier in it. They, honestly, I don't think that their application was really all that on point, to be honest. But regardless, they ran out of funding. They ran out of time.
Right.
What were some of the indicators that A, you looked for, and B, what should others be looking for to be able to align their technological advancements along with the opportunities in the markets, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, we were very commercially focused from the beginning. So lots of people start technology companies, and particularly now, lots of people are starting AI companies without necessarily a notion of what it's going to do commercially, right?
Well, and Mark Cuban saying that the first trillionaire is going to come out of AI is not going to help people with deterring their dreams.
Right. So there'll be more companies, but hopefully many of those companies will have a very clear idea of the business problem that we're trying to solve. And so we knew really early the business problem that we were trying to solve. Lots of data, a need to communicate information from that data, an audience for that information, but really impenetrable in terms of the form and the form factor. And so, again, we thought companies, with all of the investment that they had made in data and data infrastructure, we're going to need something beyond dashboards and charts and graphs to communicate this data. So we knew there was a problem, and we felt like we had a pretty good solution. Now, when we started, we would call on people, and I went on every sales call for the first couple of years, and there were really a couple of reactions. The first was, we don't believe you. It doesn't work. Or we believe you, but why would anybody want this? And, we just beat on people's doors for a long time and started to acquire customers, just one customer at a time. And I think for me, really, the inflection point, or one of the early inflection points, was when we started to call on people, and one, they believed us. We didn't have to really jump through a lot of hoops. And two, they started to come to us with real ideas of how the technology could be used, far beyond things that we even thought about. And it was really at that time where it felt like, well, things feel like they're shifting a little bit. It still took us several years after that inflection point to really have what I would describe as a very robust commercial business. But you do look for those small signs, and that was clearly one of them.
Yeah, I think this is, I noticed this with a handful of the CEOs and leaders that we've had come in the show. You mentioned, I just call it being on call. All of the different founders that I know who have had success and have been able to make those changes really on the fly and be able to kind of shot call things are the ones who were on the calls from the very beginning and didn't go, well, I've got my plan and here it is. And now we hit go and they start going. And then it's like they report back to me and I'm seeing that the numbers are slipping. And then they go and try to make changes. Being on the call and actually hearing the critical questions as well as the doubts as well as the adoration for what you're creating, I think enables you to better – sort of come together with like what you're trying to do.
Yeah, there's no question. I also think that there are very few credible people in the early days of a startup. Somebody has to really carry the story and really say it with conviction and live it. And I think it's, you know, it's a very big part of a CEO's job always, but particularly at the beginning, to really get out there and to show the passion that there is for the business and really convince people, even if they think that, yeah, this is something that they wouldn't use, really convince them why they should use it.
Well, you wouldn't believe the number of startup founders and people who've come to us, whether it's on stage or on the show, and phrased the question, or actually it's not a question, they phrased the statement in the form of a question by saying, we're going to solve this problem? As in, they don't even believe it themselves. It's just, you know, it's pretty funny that if you don't believe you're going to be able to do it, no one else is going to believe you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to have conviction from day one. And that really has to be the thing that carries you through. As you know, I think firsthand, there are lots of reasons to get dejected when you're building, a company like Narrative Science. Yep. And there's lots of reasons to think it's not going to work, particularly when there's not a market. There aren't a number of companies that have gone before you to really show you the way. And, that has to be just unwavering, the conviction and the unwavering belief that you're gonna make it.
Well, that was the number one thing that Vic said to me, was that Stuart had unwavering belief, and was like, you told me that, and was like, you said you're gonna do it, I just assumed he's gonna do it.
Yeah, well, that's
very
great.
Cool.
Great to hear.
Before we send you out of here, we're not gonna send you out of here, before you head out of here, what would be that next space that you see you guys sort of starting to invest time in looking into?
So we have really since inception focused on a direct business, right? Direct sales force, calling on companies, talking about our technology, helping them understand how they would use the technology in their business, right? So we work with, for example, lots of mutual funds and asset managers where we've automated the process of generating quarterly performance summaries and attribution reports for these organizations. Other things in compliance, things like improving customer communications, right? Instead of giving customers data and charts and graphs, we actually give them, we give them something in natural language that helps them understand their investment account, for example. We're going to continue pushing on that business. But about a year ago, we really started focusing on an indirect business, in particular, integrating our technology with third-party technology applications, other companies' technology applications, because our view is that anywhere where there is a reporting interface where the primary delivery vehicle for information is a chart or a graph would be not only enhanced but actually made useful by including a dynamically generated narrative that explains to the user exactly what they're looking at and do that in real time. So we started this business about a year ago. We're integrated with lots of BI companies now, including companies like Tableau and Click, who your listeners may have heard of, Microsoft Power BI, SAP Lumira. And then we have a number of other companies that are, I would describe, more vertical analytics companies where we've also integrated with those companies. And so users now of those applications, again, can interact with the workspaces in these applications. And as they're looking at data and they're manipulating data within these applications, they get a narrative from Quill that's generated in real time, and it's dynamic. So as they change things in that third-party application, the narratives change with them and really explain and illuminate the visualization that they're looking at. That will be a big part of our business moving forward. And we've always thought that our technology would be ubiquitous, that there wouldn't be a spreadsheet or a table of numbers or a business intelligence application that existed without narrative generation capability. And this is the way to do that, by integrating with all of these technology applications that are already sitting on the desktops of millions of knowledge workers.
I'm thrilled to know you for two reasons. One, Mark Cuban might be right and you might be that guy, so I want to remember you. You might be the next trillionaire. But the other thing that is also really important and cool is you and your company, not just you and your company and technology, are going to make companies that we deal with as consumers on a regular basis much more fun to do business with because they understand their customers better. They understand efficiency better. We don't have to pay overpriced for their mistakes. Well, they're still going to charge us that price, but at least I'll know that it wasn't for their screw-up.
You'll know, you're right.
Very cool. You go to narrativescience.com to find out more about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Stuart, thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Can we give everyone a round of applause?
We might as well. We'll start a new tradition. It's
I
a
like
new,
that.
New round of applause.
That was awesome.
So,
what freaked me out is when he was talking about at the beginning about how you can take this data and then have essentially a computer basically give a sports report. My sister's a sports reporter. So I feel like you say, some people might be a little bit freaked out by this.
He didn't talk about whether or not it has like good personality.
That's true. So I'm very curious to see where that goes. That was pretty fascinating.
Cool. I'm glad that you're able to sit in here and listen to this. Sorry for the noise there. I'm glad you get to sit in on some of this and get an idea of like what we do here. Because I mean, if you can find this entertaining.
Yeah.
Then you could help me find a way to get everyone who's outside of the window right now to find this as entertaining as I find it.
Yeah,
that's your. I'm setting up with your first job.
This is good. Yeah, no, this is good.
And you've got notes and everything.
I have so
this
many
is incredible.
Notes.
Holy
yeah.
cow.
Oh, yeah. I have tons of stuff.
I make this shit up on the fly.
That's a talent, though, in itself. So
you got to see the final product. It's not that talented. Our next guest, we are back at Technori live on WGN Radio and on Facebook. Are we still on Facebook? Sort of, kind of. We're on. All right. Well, we're on. We're working on the technology behind that. Mark Zuckerberg's on the other line right now. Michael Infinger, you are, did I get that right?
That's right.
Close enough. you are the founder of Varena Solutions. Before we get into all this, I want to start by talking about Marquette.
I think we have to.
You're a Marquette guy. You're in the seat here because of our buddy Bill Fritz, who's also a Marquette guy.
Yep.
Marquette is in the dance. Northwestern is in the dance.
I'm a Northwestern alum.
Wow,
so
congratulations.
This is Showbiz Shelley, who's joining us today. Yeah. She is a Northwestern. Actually, our whole staff, are all Northwestern alum.
Oh, wow, you guys are going nuts over here.
Yeah.
Give me a cheer. Cheer, yeah.
See, it's all good.
Go, you Northwest.
Oh, my
God. Are we going to do that whole thing?
You
no,
are.
No, no one's going to join
me. You just
me.
Did.
They're all silent. They're all silent.
There we go.
Well, in full disclosure, you went to undergrad at Northwestern.
I did.
The rest of us didn't, so we don't know. We're not real Northwestern people.
Oh, no wonder I carried that. Okay.
You spend more time with us, you're going to learn you're going to have to carry a lot more because it's, boy, this is disjointed sometimes.
All right. That's okay.
But no, so we're back onto the main deal here. You have created a company. You were at Marquette University where we were there. Did you study dentistry there? Or?
No. Computer engineering. So nothing
assume.
Even
if you
close.
Go to Marquette, it's dentistry and nursing and then
that's it. There's nothing else and then whatever
dentist?
You did.
Oh, wow. Okay. No. Got it. So you weren't a dentist. Okay.
No.
Didn't do that. So engineering background. But I had a lot of friends who were in the dental school program. They've got a pre-dental scholar program. So you get into dental school in high school, which I don't know what crazy person does that, but they did that. And then as I worked in Milwaukee after I graduated, they went to dental school. And kind of going through, events going through with them, they mentioned the products that they didn't like. And at the top of the list was needle usage. There's no safe way to use them, and they just didn't like it. The procedures they teach are not really adopted out of school, and so there's no standard safety. And
I don't have a problem getting shots, but I do actually, I do.
You're one of the few. You're one of the few.
But I'm afraid of needles, though, not because of like getting it, but I'm afraid of like, so this is the stupidest segue of all time. I live in the suburbs. It's just fine. At a place called Raintree, which is totally fine. It's by a golf course. That's what I tell people. But it's also a place like a lot of older people live. And I swear to God, like I'm worried when I go in and I throw stuff in the dumpsters that there's going to be like needles from. This is stupid, but it's true.
It's mostly dental needles. It's mostly from.
I don't know.
I'm always like, I'll
pick the bags up and throw out my garbage and stuff. And I'm always wondering like, all right, if I put my hand, like, is there going to, you know, because they've got at-home assistance and people like giving, you know, diabetes, whatever. I don't know.
Right, I don't
want to get pricked with a needle because I don't know where that, it's like a bowl on it. I don't know what's on this.
Well, to what you're saying right now, so dentistry is the start. There's a huge port for this in almost every part of medical. So home use with home injections, veterinary, oddly enough, you wouldn't think that'd be an issue. But
I got a pooch. He gets shots. We need to, you know.
You don't want pooch blood. Nobody wants that.
Well, I mean, I just don't want Ebola. I don't want Ebola. I don't know if that's a shot thing or not.
Blood transfusion. Yeah, but it can go through that.
Okay. Yep. Well, then I don't want Ebola. One of the main reasons I have you in here, other than just to BS around about Marquette and shots, is you have a product right now that I think is really cool. I've been interrupting you. We're going to let you get into like the whole deal of why it's uniquely cool.
Sure.
But the real reason behind me having you in here is that there's a lot of companies. You were a Matter Chicago company at one point?
So I'm at Matter as well as MHub.
Oh, yeah.
MHub's
my main man, Bill Fittum. You guys just opened up in lunch.
Who went to high school with me, actually.
Did you really?
Oddly enough, a small world.
So you went to Marquette, he went to MIT, and then somewhere in between.
Yeah, but yeah, we split off and then somehow met up at Catalyze, actually, the precursor.
When he started. Yeah, so Bill was on this show not long ago. Showbiz Shelley should have been at the event launch for MHub, but he didn't invite.
I missed that. No,
that was a party. That was a party.
It must have gotten lost in the mail. I don't know.
The mayor, they didn't have a normal ribbon cutting ceremony. He took a saw and he buzzed through a metal
plasma cutter. Right.
A plasma cutter.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, sparks flying everywhere. It was.
Oh, that's
only at
cool.
A tech event. Would you have something cool like
See,
that?
I don't
See,
it was awesome. That is cool.
There are cool things, but so the main thing is. At those incubators and places, they focus on helping people become companies, not products.
Well, it's sort of both. So the biggest thing those places provide is, I guess, engineering talent and consulting. When you're developing a physical device, it's very different from a piece of software in that the barrier to entry is very high. And so for me, you've got the physical device on top of that medical, which is a huge regulatory issue, on top of that dental. So if I can tell people not to go into a business, it would be a dental medical hardware device. But places like MHub, they've got people there that can assist with design changes, design features, how to prototype in the right way, how to move into, low volume production, how then to scale up. Scaling up with hardware is very difficult, and so they've done a very good job helping with that.
And you also have Joe Parisi there just to, like, make everyone laugh.
Joe's a great guy. He's
I say that knowing that I don't have to know whether or not you know him, because if you are at MHub, you know Joe Parisi. If you're anywhere in Chicago.
The Gar Lama guys are there all the time. They're actually a fantastic group, all of them.
He showed up to this show in a mink coat.
That's his normal attire.
It's a real thing. He had a mink coat and a T-shirt that said Guard Llama. That was it.
He has more dress sweatpants than I've ever seen anybody have in my entire life.
Dress sweatpants.
But he pulls it off. Like, he's this casual business.
He's a smooth
hybrid guy.
He's on a mink coat. That's impressive.
He's probably going to get pissed when I say this, but his show. He was on Shark Tank. The show airs like April 19th.
I think you're allowed to say it now.
April 19th. Yep, you can see Guard Llama.
I was going to say, too, with what you're doing, I know all the time they say on Shark Tank, this is a product, not a business. And then they get so upset, and I feel bad for them because I'm like, ooh, you want to shake them. Like,
and that's kind of where we're at with this.
So right.
I think what's cool is that you have built a product that I think is going to sell incredibly well. I think it's going to be very popular. But to the point that you were making before, that you are working on other products, how did you... when you went into this, how did it appears that you came into this knowing that I want to build a company that makes the product design company, not just a product, and then I just schlep the product?
It's a product platform. We're going to be a multi-product company, absolutely. Our goal is not to move this into low volume production and then be bought. That would be a bad worst case scenario for us. My investors would probably kill me to say that. But what we've realized is that. For what we're doing to be successful, it's got to be something that answers, I think, to what everybody else has said before, basic questions around the patient. Right now, when people build products, I come at this as a patient. So often you see medical products, they're from a doctor, and they design it for themselves. I think about it, what would I want to see? I don't like needles as much as anybody else does. So we looked at this and we looked at, what's the long-term goal? No needles. So long-term solution is actually removing needles entirely from the procedure. That's kind of what we're trying to do.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there who I think would be pretty happy to find out.
Good. Me included.
This one, I do the no looking. And I just say, here, just do it. And I just wanted to get it over with.
Yeah. I think most people do the same.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't know.
That's crazy.
Who do you guys have pulling for winning the tournament?
Northwestern.
I think they'll go far. They
could go far into Thursday.
Right.
They could. I think the game's in the afternoon.
Late into Thursday evening.
Yeah.
Right.
I would love that. I mean, I think Marquette, honestly, I don't see.
Duke's tough. Duke's going to be tough.
Everyone loves Duke.
They've looked really good the second half of the year. I mean, I think in the beginning they weren't quite sure, but they've really shown to be a strong team. Wojo, I love his commitment to. If you're the best player in practice, you're playing. And I think it drives a competition that, maybe we didn't see for a while.
Well, I think that's why you see Marquette And now Northwestern. We both stole both the coaches from Duke with Chris Collins.
Yep, so. Yep, absolutely. Hopefully in South Carolina we won't be too overwhelmed by Duke fans.
Did you see, by the way, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's son is on Northwestern?
Yeah, she tweeted out when they won. So when they won the game, she tweeted out that they're dancing, and it was her amazing dance.
I know. I had to throw that in there. Elaine Bennett's hilarious.
That's the crazy non-dance, yeah.
Yeah.
So as we kind of circle back into topic with it's
we digress.
We go –
basketball time. Got to talk.
Listen, Thursday we have a show. Last year during the show, I just had the games on the entire time. I was literally giving updates.
You're just looking up at the camera.
The podcasts were totally worthless because everyone's listening. Like, we can't even share this because it's all you talk about is the basketball game and it's already over. And you're like,
hold on for a double overtime. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, just the show must go on. But, you know, I want to ask you a couple questions about how you have built this company. I noticed that you now have a handful of people in the company.
Right.
You are working out of a handful of different spaces, which obviously lends the ability for you to sort of scale where maybe a company that does what you do couldn't before.
Correct.
As the CEO and founder of this company, knowing that you had a difficult task ahead of you in that, you had to build a product. How did you start and build this company to even just get to the point where you're at now?
Well, I started out thinking I could do everything and realizing that was wrong.
Yeah.
When it comes
That's
to hardware.
That's how it normally starts.
I mean, hardware, and I think specifically medical, you realize very quickly there's a lot of things that you don't know unless you've done it for 20 years. And so we realized very quickly we had to bring on people that were really good at specific things. So the engineering piece, I've got an engineering background, but we needed somebody. So our main engineer is a Northwestern grad. Woo, woo. He's fantastic, and he took what I did and made it real. We have a injection molding manufacturing partner. We realized that there's so many iterations and costs with that. It's kind of an art form. We needed a group, again, who'd done this for 20 years, had needle experience. Hoosier Custom Plastics out of Indiana has been fantastic. And then on the medical side, the FDA regulation is insane. And so and when it comes to dental, it's kind of guesswork. So we had to employ companies that and people that have done this again for 20 or 30 years that could give us, well, if the FDA comes to you and audits you, this is the best way to come out well. When it comes to the FDA, there's not really a right or wrong. It's whatever you can prove. And that was a big learning for us, is knowing, okay, what is the way to prove in the best way that we can. So I think it's been bringing on anybody else can say the same thing. It's been bringing on people that have done this for a long time. And then, I guess, being able to pull those abilities out of them. That's been, I guess, the challenge for me and the learning for me.
That's a great life school, though, because I know in general, some people might let their egos get in the way and say, no, I can't do
it was
everything.
Hard.
And then they go down the tubes real quick because, like you say, you need other people who know what they're doing.
You have to.
Yeah.
Well, and eventually you let them run and you're like, wow, right. This is way better than would have been otherwise. Just being on my own. So, we did our first big product launch was at the Midwinter Dental Show at McCormick Place about 3 weeks ago. So that was kind of the big, like, coming out party for us. Lots of traction, lots of distributors. In fact, we're at a point where I'm almost not selling. We're waiting until we can fill product or orders and then kind of go back into a regional rollout.
Well, that leads me to my last question I've got for you, actually, because one of the real difficulties, and I think MHUB will help with this because they're going to have investors and partners that are sort of on board there,
absolutely,
sort of sitting in the wings to like oversee things and invest when they think it makes sense. With a company such as yourself, when you are trying to build a product and you only have a limited MVP and you get it in front of people, and this is one where it needs FDA approval, so it's not like I can take this MVP and go, like, give this to your patients. And
there's not really an MVP.
Yeah.
And the difference is you have to be right out of the gate.
So how do you sell investors on the idea of, like, I'm going to build this thing, trust me, I'm not going to screw it up, and it's not going to kill anyone, and it's going to be something that people want to use, and, oh, by the way, I can't really prove that until we do it, and it's going to cost, $100,000 to get us to where I can even find out if a thing works?
I think, and that's a great question.
I'm a hell of a salesman. that's
Are you looking for a job? Because we could use you at Brainy Solutions.
I mean, we are selling these branded content things. We can just set the people in front of me and I'll plug away at it.
That's Brainy Solutions.
Solutions.
Right, yeah, that's how I like that. I think the biggest thing has been not going to investors until you had people on the team that gave you credibility. Because I'm 32. In the medical world, that's still young.
Yep.
And, maybe in tech, that's old. But I had to bring
Surprisingly, it's not.
Good to know. I had to bring in people that had done this for a very long time, and I could put them in front and say, I'm going to sell this hard, and I'm going to be passionate, but in case you don't buy what I'm saying, these people who've done this forever agree with me. And that's been the way to do it. Getting funding for a dental hardware device in the Chicagoland area is not the easiest thing to get funding for, but the way we found success is starting with passion, starting with belief. I think people have said before, I mean, we believe, we know we're going to do this. And it's funny when you talk to people that have not built a company or built a product, when you say, I'm going to do something, oftentimes they're like, what if you fail? I don't know what that even means. What does that even mean? We're going to do it. We're just going to do it.
Very cool.
And so it's having those people behind me and then the passion in front of it.
You know, it's funny. We say the same thing, and not to plug Technori Showcase and stuff, but I mean, I'm going to plug it. The main thing that I have told every startup founder that I have talked to, before they go on stage is projections. It's sort of like the Mike Tyson or whoever is attributed the quote, like projections are great till you're punched in the face, and then it's just it's a war
out the window.
And so the idea that you're going to go in front of people, don't waste your breath and your time talking about, oh, here's how much money we're going to tell
the
them your vision,
stick, right.
Get them to buy it in, buy into it. Here's the mission. Here's how we're going to do it. And just show your passion and be steadfast at it. And work ethic will turn out at the end.
I couldn't agree more with that. And that's been what we've done.
Yeah. Very cool. Where do people go to learn more about your company?
www.verena, V as in Victor, E-R-E-N-A, .solutions, no.com. We somehow found that there was a domain out there with solutions in it, so we grabbed the company name.
Well, you know what? The last show we had on, we had Stuart from Narrative Science, and he was talking about how he worked at DoubleClick. I actually own the domain name for click.click. So,
wow.
Boom, DoubleClick.
Hold out for those millions when they call
you.
That's
a deal.
Someone's going to get it. It's all cool.
JohnMalkovich.com.
JohnMalkovich.com. I actually do have some pretty good domains that I won't say on this air.
Oh, boy.
But at any rate, Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Those are another applause. I like adding the applause.
Hey, go Northwestern. Congratulations.
Go Northwestern. They're going to make it past Thursday. I have faith.
Thursday, Friday. Friday at 9:50. Or 8:50. Yeah.
We'll be watching here.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
That was fun.
Are you having fun yet?
I'm having a blast.
Do you want to come more to these things? You can say no.
I would love to come more. No, I would love to come more if you would have me.
Tell me, while we're waiting, tell me a couple of cool event things that we've got going on.
Okay,
here.
So I came across a couple things, and you tell me what you think. But I had to talk about, there is, because of Women's History Month, there's something kind of cool that's happening at the Anita Borg Institute, where they've organized a panel of female senior-level technology executives who are going to share sort of their journeys and challenges. So that's happening on Thursday, 7:30, like I said, at the Anita Borg Institute. So that should be cool. And this is just a little something that's kind of science-y, but also a little bit entertainment-y that I thought was really cool. That's actually happening. It's tonight at 7 o'clock at the Music Box Theater. You can mix sort of science with the Field Museum, where they are going to do a screening of Sharknado. And then they're going to have a guy there from the Field Museum who's going to give you the science.
Sharknado's back?
It's back, Scott. Whether you like
it
or not.
I thought this thing, didn't it eat like an air tube and get shot by, that's Jaws.
There's been like two or three of them at this point. Yeah. So this guy, he's going to sort of talk about evolution and molecules and how this whole thing could maybe happen in real life. So there's that whole thing, if you're interested in that tonight at the Music Box.
I would say it's pretty safe to say that I'm not interested in the Sharknado
tonight.
I
figured you wouldn't be, but if you're listening, you there, if you are, you can check that out.
And then there's that great event on March 28th, the Technori Showcase at Chase Auditorium.
I hear that's
one of the best events in town.
Saving the best for last. There
Always saving the best. Thank you, Shelly, very much for coming in. Thank you for this first segment. We give you the round of applause now.
Oh, thank you so much.
You get the round of applause.
I appreciate
cool.
you over there.
we are stretching the studio to its maximum today.
I know.
Those of you watching on the other side of this camera have no idea what goes into this little trickery that we're pulling off here. Okay, so we are back at Technori Live. This is a very special. Is it special? We're going to make it special.
It feels special to me.
It should be. You're back. If you might recognize the voice, that's Mike Dwyer, who's the head of talent at Cars.com.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
And Dave Dom is joining.
Dave Dom, Senior Director of Product at Cars.com.
Awesome. We are all set then. So I wanted to bring you guys back in, Mike back in, you in for the first time, because we talk about how this is a startup showcase. Technori is this startup where startups go to launch, where tech companies come to talk about how they're getting involved in the Chicago tech community as well as in startups. And I view Cars.com as one of the original Chicago
the OG.
Startup. It's the OG. It's the OG.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
And you guys are working at a company that I think people now don't know what you do. Like, I really, truly don't think people understand what cars, I mean, they just think of cars. I don't know if they know what cars.com
is. We don't
is.
Sell cars.
Yeah, so that's something new.
Physically.
physically. We move them, we just don't sell them.
Right.
I think that first off, I want to get into this and talk about like what Cars.com does for one, for those. And then we're going to get into some fun conversations between the two of you, because your backgrounds are going to be a perfect way for those who are building their startup now to A, perhaps build themselves into an OG, and B, be able to actually, once they are an OG, continue to stay afloat and not become a no-G. So
that's good.
Thank you. I just like came up with that. Came up with that on the spot. Right?
You can have that.
It's all yours.
Oh, thanks.
Courtesy.
Thank you.
So why don't we start off with sort of what Cars.com is?
Yeah, yeah. Dave, you want me to do it? Okay, yeah. Well, I'm the head of recruiting. I should know. We're the leading decision engine for anyone buying or selling a car. So we have over, I think, 30 million users, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And we have been around since 1998, and we have a lot of exciting things happening in this that we had in 2016 and coming into 2017, moving into a new space here. And we also have announced recently that we're going to go public and separate from our parent company. So that's an exciting
party
news. So
that is really cool.
Yeah.
Another IPO
yeah.
comes to Chicago. So
that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
This
so
very, cool.
very Chicago-based company. Very proud of our roots. And we've, been, investing a lot here. We're a very philanthropic company. You know, we have a volunteer day for all of our employees, and we try to give back in a lot of different ways in the STEM community and then just across Chicago in other ways too.
And over time, I have no doubt that we're going to develop more relationships there as we discussed offline, the work we're trying to do, getting involved with CPS and figuring a way to fund some of these things. If the government's not going to pay for their school, and somebody's got to help them out.
Yeah.
So hopefully companies like Cars.com can get involved. But how long have you both been at Cars?
Newbies. I've been here about 5 months.
5 months.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm almost at my year.
You're at your year.
So, yeah.
This is, I think, going to be a great part or a great way to step into this conversation.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of these older companies is if you're not doing it our way, if you're not from you weren't the OG, you weren't there from the get-go, you are on the outlier circuit right from the get-go. And there's almost no way for you to have any impact, positive, I guess, or negative in some cases, to actually help this company move forward and shape its new identity, which, Dave, I'm really excited to hear kind of your take on this. I know that I've heard a lot about your speech on these things. So I'm setting the bar higher for you again.
It's infamous now.
Yeah.
It is. I'm setting the bar higher for you again. You know, I set a low for me. I'm going to set it kind of low for Mike.
Thank you.
High for you, Dave.
All right.
We're looking forward to hearing about kind of your view on this, because I really think that what you guys do at Cars is something that can, not that you want it to be duplicated, but I would love to see more companies take on this approach. So I'm going to cut right to you.
All right. Wow. No, it's interesting. We, people ask me, why are you at Cars? You know, especially in the startup world, I come from startups. My background is first half spent in banking and then decided I wanted to start building things, and launched three different startups, two internet companies. And, you know, former friends are still in the space and they always ask me, how'd you end up there? And, you know, it's interesting. I started looking at Cars a couple years ago, but I made the decision to come this past year just because I see what's about to happen. I mean, we are doing really cool things at the company. And to your point, Scott, we're embracing this new kind of mindset, which is what I'll call intrapreneurial, and engaging everyone at the company to think like an entrepreneur, which is perfect for me, right? It's the perfect kind of place where I'd like to call home. I'll never stop being an entrepreneur, but having a company like Cars kind of back that thought process and that methodology, it's fantastic. And, you know, I would love to start seeing more big tech companies in the city embrace that startup kind of mindset, because it totally helps when it comes to product development and test and learn and really getting to that product market fit that all entrepreneurs are in desperate search.
Well, before I ask you some of the kind of trade secrets on how they do it, but I want to tell you to validate, not that you need my validation, but to validate your point on this, of the companies, and we've seen quite a bit of them come through here. And I can tell you the ones that are still here and huge because they just have such a gigantic list and a gigantic model of movement that, as long as there's human beings breathing and clicking on their webpage, they're going to still make money.
Right.
But there's no one, everyone's asleep at the wheel. The vast majority of companies we've had come in here, Capital One, KCura, Groupon, even to a point, is continuing to grow and make changes as they see, issues and things happen. Grubhub's another one that they're seeing things coming and they're trying to make changes. But in particular, I'm going to circle back on Capital One and KCura. They take a very, very similar approach to what you guys do with regard to giving people the ability and the freedom and promoting and saying, listen, I'm not going to force you to do it. If you want to do it, we'd love you to. If you're interested in these areas, here's some spots that you could kind of jump on teams that are working in interdisciplinary teams throughout the company. Those are the companies that are growing incredibly fast, even though they're already huge.
Yeah.
Those are companies that are bringing on new people constantly. And I have to tell you, having gone to their spaces, they have the most talented people. Bar none.
Well, I think that people today want, especially software engineers, people in technology, want to have that ownership, right? They want to feel like they're a part of something, building something, especially if you look at all the statistics around millennials and, the type of environments they want to work in. They want to feel like they're a part of something, you know, special. And so I think that, you know, empowering them to be entrepreneurial while they're in a larger company is something that's very exciting to them. And that's something that was appealing to me when I came. And then I think it's also been today.
How do you
think
that
other companies like KCure and stuff are kind of empowering people in the same ways?
For sure.
They're getting it.
Yeah, it's like we talked about before. They get it. But how specifically do you guys do that? How do you manage to hit your objectives and do what you're supposed to do, like from the cars.com corporate level, like how do we do our job, why we exist, but then also spend such a large amount of energy on fostering this innovative culture and this community and giving the due attention to those ideas that are worth it and those that are not worth it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's early days, right? I mean, we launched a pilot late last year. It went unbelievably well, and we decided to roll it out company-wide. Testament.
And you got to make that speech.
Yeah, and I got to make the speech. Yeah.
Well, tell the speech. We had a tech and product all, and you know, we had about 300 or 400 people there, and Dave got up, and he hasn't been with the company very long, and he just gave this really passionate speech about what we're all there to do, and you know, it was literally like Bill Murray in Stripes, you know, kind of feel to it, you know. I thought
I actually had a picture of Bill Murray in the slide presentation.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
We want you.
Yeah, right.
That's what perfect. I
maybe that. Yeah. Wow, that subconsciously
right? It worked.
It got resonated in there. With Mike.
Subliminal
so
messaging
worked.
Does work.
Yeah. As so here we are today. No, but I mean, so we had success at the end of the year, and you know, I got to say, a testament to our C-suite, right at the top, who basically said, "Yeah, this looks like something promising. Let's not only embrace it, let's invest in it." Right, and we rolled it out company wide in January, and so far it's been fantastic. I think to Mike's point, what makes it work is really enabling everyone to have a sense of autonomy and accountability in a way that they've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, to answer your question, how we're set up. We're set up in a series of mini pods. It's similar. We look to Spotify as influence for how we design the model, but we've made some changes as well. But essentially, our product and tech teams are now 16 mini startups within Cars, and each has their own mission, working independently of the other pods, staffed with a developer, a product manager, a tech lead, a design lead, and a bunch of developers. But they're all just running like as a startup. And we like to say, don't ask for permission, just go do it. And it's like 2 months in and it's fantastic. We're already seeing positive incremental results.
This must just absolutely ruin your recruiting ability.
It's just terrible for us.
Yeah. I'm sure it's just a real pain.
I know.
You know, every time you have to see some young guy or young girl and they're like, you know,
I'm going to beat him away.
I want to sit at a cubicle and just waste my life away. I don't understand.
Yeah. No, it's been great. I think that, you know, we've certainly have a lot of openings, you know, to support the structure. And, you know, it's an exciting sell for me, being someone who's an entrepreneur as well, you know, and something that attracted me to the company earlier on. You know, I mean, he's been here only 5 or 6 months, but I saw, and they were talking about this before when I was talking to them. And so it's been exciting to see it being actually executed. You know?
What are you, like, you know, I think one of the things it's going to get easier on your end probably, but... hopefully. But I think that there's still a challenge when it comes to recruiting, though, in this, because that now you are looking for somebody who is a little bit more independent thinker. Mm-hmm. And the school systems, even though we've got a lot of entrepreneurs, and I would argue that many of them come out of like the result of couldn't get a job and live in my parents' basement, I can't take it anymore, so I started whatever I have to start to pay for my McDonald's, like whatever I got to do. And so we're like kind of boring entrepreneurial mindsets like post-schooling. But schooling is set up in a way where it kind of conditions people to pack together and not really think like an entrepreneur, actually. Mm-hmm. So how are you able to find and recruit people that you think are a good plug-in to this setup?
Yeah, I think you
got me on the spot.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks there, Scott. That's awesome. Look at the snow outside. I think that there's...
And I looked.
I think I did, sucker. I think that there's several different things. I think talking to people, you know, through different... You know, speaking events that we do, I think is something that's really important, showing how we do this and that, you know, when we communicate out what we're looking for in a candidate, making sure that they know that, hey, this is the type of person we're looking for. If you do want to come to a company and just, you know, do your job every day and do as you're told, and this is probably not the right fit for you.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, making sure that we embed that kind of dialogue with our hiring managers when they're talking to candidates, that we're doing it in the copy that we put out there for, you know, them branding around why come to Cars, I think is critical. and our core values, things like that. So I think that those are all things that we do to make sure that we're putting the message out there that, hey, we want free thinkers, people that can kind of think outside of that box. And I don't necessarily know if you're going to always get them from traditional schools either. You know, you don't have to be to go. You don't have to have a CS degree to be a good software developer today. You know, Dave is not someone necessarily that came from a traditional product environment. I mean, he was the CEO of his own startups, you know, so he built products, but he wasn't like a product manager type of a person, you know. So I think that it just depends on the person and really making sure that you have the right types of people that can kind of execute in this new model.
Very cool. I guess one final thing I kind of want to get in with this, I guess, is when it comes to recruiting, to your point a little bit, when you mentioned the fact that most of the kind of, I guess, I don't want to like put down some of the older businesses that are running on a different model, but when they recruit, they're all embedded in like certain areas, certain colleges, certain programs, that's what they do. And now with this, you're looking for people in all kinds of different areas in the schools. How are you getting yourselves into the right places to find the right talent? And then are you able to tell them like right off the bat, like, hey, this isn't like what you think it is. Like you're not applying to cars. Why? Is that because you don't know what it is? You think we sell cars? This is what we do. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that? Because I feel like this isn't, you know, you're creating new things, new opportunities, but with them become new problems.
Right, right. Gosh, that's just those tough problems. I think that what we've got, you know, the mindset is that everyone in the company is a recruiter, right? So it's not just a recruiter's role. You know, we have needs in product. Dave is helping with that. You know, it's people buy from people they know, they trust, they like, and it's not necessarily always going to be the recruiter that's that person that does it. So I don't know if companies in 10 years are going to have recruiting as a traditional role. I think that because of how everything is digital and mobile and you're able to interact with people on a one-on-one basis based on what the way that they choose, that potentially, you know, hiring managers, people in the organization will be the ones that will be helping to recruit. And so they'll be recruiting like-minded people. So if you're hiring certain people, then they're going to recruit other people like that. So what I want to do at Cars is empower people within the organization to help be a part of recruiting and bringing the right people in. Birds of a feather flock together, Scott.
So that's I hear. That's why we're all, yeah. Did you write that?
I did. Just like, created that out of nowhere.
Hey, you know what? He's getting you back because you were, you know, you're throwing him down talking about putting Bill Murray and stuff. This has been incredibly fascinating. There's so much more to talk about in this area. I'm hoping that you guys will start returning back here more often. I think that there's two conversations that I would like to sort of develop in a longer term. The first one is obviously around this recruiting area. I think that it's really fascinating. I also think that people are only hearing from recruiters. They're not hearing direct from the companies anymore for the most part, and that gives them sort of the wrong opinion, I think, of the companies that they're maybe passing by. And then the other part is, how do we stay and grow a business that is like continuing innovating? And there's a much larger conversation that I would love to have specifically with you, Dave, on the, not that you can't play, Mike.
No,
But with you, Dave, on the fact that I truly believe that the big companies, the cars.coms of the future, are brands that we trust that provide us with things we trust. And inside of that is essentially one gigantic, well-funded incubator that come up with products that we slam underneath that brand that you trust.
Yep.
And that's where I see business going. So I would love to have you guys back again and again and again and again to talk about this. And I'm sure that our audience would agree, because at some point, if we can get this done, I'd like to start get this done, meaning Facebook is working. I'd love to get people the ability to call in and ask questions and sort of things.
That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
This would
be
great.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Cool.
Thank you
Scott.
Guys both for coming in.
Thanks, Shelby Shelley.
Yeah.
More applause. More applause.
More applause.
I want to thank all of our sponsors who are now gone because we ran over time as always. And I want to thank our guests. We had an amazing showcase of talent today. You can watch this episode. Oh, wait. I want to thank Showbiz Shelley for keeping us up on the events and sticking around.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Where do people go to follow Showbiz Shelley?
So you can follow me on all social media. I'm just Showbiz Shelley on everything.
I highly recommend Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I like Instagram.
That's I'm just saying.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank goodness for the stories. Of course, you can watch this episode and more at technori.com. You can download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Twitter and Facebook at technori, or follow me at Katoon, or follow Shelley at Showbiz Shelley. Boom. That's a wrap.